To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Welcome, everyone, to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction. What's up, everybody? You know that song, you know this voice. It's your boy Rook, and I'm all alone today, but I'm not. That's right, it's the return. Everybody, welcome back to the show, Shane Berryhill.
Hey, everybody. So glad to be back on the Two Dimension Podcast.
There you go, man. And man, it has been a while since we talked to you, and you have been down the road. And first off, let's talk for a second about this new book that you've got coming out. And it's not till August. Is that right?
That is correct. August 9th, it'll hit stores. The title of the book is called Comic Books Kill. The premise is 1930s New York. Golden Age comics creator Jack Levi places his life and career on the line when he enters into an illicit love affair with the femme fatale mistress of his mob boss publisher. It kind of uses the long-held rumor that Golden Age comics, the comics industry at that time, served as a front for organized crime, which was just long held that, you know. So what we do, you know, this is the 30s. It's after Prohibition, but, you know, we set up early on in the book. And it's published by the good people at Scout Comics, by the way. Yes. Check out all their awesome titles. Like one of my favorites is Road Trip to Hell. So be sure and check out that cool series. But but anyway, yeah, we set up early in the books. It's like Prohibition Revisited. You know, during the earliest days, it was the vices were pulps and booze. Well, now that was legal again, I was just like, comics replaced the pulps and heroin has replaced the booze. Replace the booze, yes. So, again, naive comics creator Jack Levi, who you can probably just tell by the name alone, a couple of guys, some of the guys he may be inspired by. he comes to New York tries to get in with a publisher, can't get in. Ultimately, you know, of course, does, but gets rejected, and just gets in involved over his head. The artist, my co-creator, is the wonderful Hoyt Silva. You might know him from another Scout Comics comic, Last Stop, and which is a superhero tale. Pretty cool. Very, check it out on digital or what have you. But Hort and I came up with this together. It's really, you know, in all humility, I love, you know, because we kind of half the tale in large part. Well, the first issue, this nonstop edition, is definitely what happens in the real world. But as the series progresses and the OGN to come, we kind of go back and forth between what's going on in these comics and what's going on in the real world and how they echo each other.
Going to be a cool juxtaposition. And while reading that, that's a really neat idea. I like that.
Yeah. It's a cool way to, you know, just echo the themes of this crime noir action tale. And you're going to see so many Easter eggs. Those of you who know your comics history, you're going to see so many nods to comics creators, past and even present, and some of their creations and behaviors. Just to give you, you know, some of the fodder we use is a tale about how Jim Steranko, how Bob Kane humiliates Jim Steranko one time, and at a convention he kind of pats him on the face, you know, and says something to say, yeah, you keep at it, kid. Kane does to Steranko, which Steranko has his own stories, but anyway, so Steranko just didn't know what to do at the time. But apparently he waits and looks for Kane the next morning, and basically I think just comes and slaps Kane. So It's been a minute. That may be not specifically the one of the tales we base our action on, but cool stuff. It does feature, you know, real world gangsters. Of course, never let the facts get in the way of a good story, Rook, I say.
There you go.
Lucky Luciano is featured, and his partnership with, Benny Siegel. The main villain of our piece is a real world gangster we use for our purposes called Tommy Gagliano. You're going to find, myth and mobsters and mistresses and just all kinds of cool action. If you like Sopranos, you'll love this book. If you like Captain America, you will love this book. So
I tell you, it sounds so incredibly interesting. And, you know, one of the things that really got me was in the write-up for it, Comic Book Kills is a crime noir tale of myths, mistresses, and mobsters. Sure to thrill the fans of Kirby, Brubaker, and Phillips. Ooh, that's big call-outs right there. well, as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, man. All right. Well, you know, that's you're talking the language of those people who love the history of comics. So that's going to be an interesting read, especially with the information you've given me now. Oh, man, this is going to be a good one. Now, this one's coming out by Scout Comics. We've talked to a few Scout Comics creators, and everybody seems to really enjoy working with them. Tell me a little bit about what that was like, getting everything together with them.
It was actually a cold submission by, I believe it was Hoyt, my co-creator and the artist. And I'll be honest with you, time went on, and we didn't hear anything on the onset. And then suddenly, out of the blue, they were kind enough to recognize, you know, because this is a controversial book. One of the things that the comics industry, you know, like Marvel Comics, the rumor was you couldn't even say the word mafia for years. That's why it's called the Magia. And so comics, you know, is not, chomping at the bit to shed light on what may be some of the darker aspects of the past of the industry. But Scout Comics was the publisher with the courage and the vision to realize what they had in this tale. And so it was fantastic. I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to my awesome editor there, Nicole D'Andrea. Nicole, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, buddy, because it's mostly just email that we've talked. But she is fantastic, and is, if I, to make comics is human, but to edit them is divine. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Nicole.
Man, that's fantastic. Yeah. It's interesting you talk about how the industry doesn't want to acknowledge the connection to the mob.
The alleged connection.
The alleged. Especially interesting for me living in a town that has the alleged connection that it was founded by the mob.
Oh, wow. Allegedly. Tell us that story, Rook.
Oh, there's a lot of stories that revolve around this area. I'm just going to call it Pasco County in Florida. Everybody, I'm sure, remembers Pasco County from Live PD. We were one of the more tame ones, I felt, watching that show. But there's a lot of stories that go around this area about how the mob was very involved in the formation of this city and this town. There's certain aspects about who lived here back in the 30s and 40s and, as far as how things came about. I'm not one of the deep historians of the city. I like to enjoy the fact that we've been the home city of people like Shirley Temple, Johnny Cash, and pretty much most of the Tampa Bay-based death metal scene at one point or another lived in Pasco County. That's my big connection. That's what I love to talk about. Oh yeah, no, it was pretty funny one New Year's Eve, sitting in a guy's house, and he says, "I'm a band's on hiatus." "Oh yeah, what band are you in?" "Oh, I'm in Morbid Angel." Being a smart mouth teenage kid, I was like, "No, you're not." I get dragged out into a garage, and he walks up to the poster, and he strikes the exact same pose he's got, crossing his arms to the poster, and he's like, "Tell me I ain't in Morbid Angel now, bitch." I was just, I love your music, dude. He goes, "Yeah, I know." Nothing like trash talking with somebody whose music you admire in their own house.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. And something we all go through at the age you're implying. Absolutely. Everybody has moment, man. Anymore, if you're me.
that was an eye-opening moment for me, because that was I was somewhere around like 16, 17, and then by 20, I'm sitting in the houses of like industrial and death metal artists, working with them on stuff, you know. So it was, that was kind of my first like, be humble, stupid moments. So with this book, are you looking to tell kind of a mythos history of the industry, or is that part of it, or you're just looking to tell an amazing comic book story?
Well, first and foremost, it's that last thing you said, an amazing comic book story. My goal when I, you know, is any comics, books, whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm writing, creating, is first and foremost to entertain. If you're not having fun, if you're not enjoying yourself, who cares about the rest?
Right.
So if you're looking for a straight up history lesson, you're not going to find it in Comic Books Kill. This isn't, you know, Comic Books Educates. although there, you know, there are some nods. You know, I became, you know, we all go through that process. First of all, you just love, you know, Spider-Man or the X-Men or Spawn or whatever it is, Batman, whatever it is in your lifetime. But you start come to a certain age and you start to notice, hey, who are these guys, those credits at the bottom? Yep. And you start to really become, you know, oh, man, they're doing this. People actually make these things? This is awesome.
Wait, I can get paid to do this?
Right. Absolutely. And it goes, you know, they become rock stars to you. I mean, speaking of death metal, and... You know, as I've gotten older, you know, I just become more and more interested. Like what is the backstory of these guys? Just and you know, I dig as much like listening to the and reading about just the lives of these creators. Sadly, there's so many sad stories, as we all know, unfortunately.
Yes.
but at the end of the day, if nothing else, you know, these guys have. You know, they say they did it for a paycheck. I'm sure that's true enough, but you know they cared. They did care.
Absolutely. Why take that abuse of, especially back in the golden age, comic book writers and artists were looked at as just a step up above pornographers.
Yeah, for most true. People.
Why take that abuse if you don't love what you're doing? Yeah, the paycheck might be nice, but you got to love what you're doing to take that kind of stigma on.
Right. Well, and to put it in context, you know, these guys, you know, which the era I'm dealing with, they're just coming out of the depression. They're like, man, we got to have this paycheck. They're not thinking, you know, I'm going to take this and go home if you don't like it, at least not for a long time. Because it's easy to be a backseat, a Monday morning quarterback then and say, well, why did you do this? Why did you accept that? But we have no right to judge them. We weren't dealing with the things, or I wasn't, that yep. they've dealt with in their lifetimes. Being able to walk away is awesome power, but it's one those guys did not have in that day and age.
True.
You know, but as things went on progressed, and I had a point there, Rook, and I'm losing it. But regardless of any, you know, financial rewards, which they should, every one of them should reap the rewards they so well deserved, but they cared and they have touched millions. And by their creations, by the passion, by the heart and soul that they put into the and what you just said at the time were considered right there with pornography and trash. Yeah. But they didn't look at it like that. And that's the secret people like you and I as kids knew. We saw that. That's why we're here doing this today, this podcast. We were in on that secret. This is not trash. This is pure, unadulterated awesomeness. Absolutely. And you know, thanks to the Marvel movies, now the world's in on the secret. And that's cool. I don't, you know, a lot of people have the mentality of, now you like comics, or now you say you like Thor. And I don't mean to mock anybody for that. I can understand, because after you've been, relegated to the side for so long, and it feels like, you know, somebody's crashing your party, per se. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, you know, it's just me. However anybody personally wants to react. But my reaction is, hey, the more the merrier. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the funnest things about being involved with comic books is sharing them.
Absolutely. You know,
with people who have read 100 comics or people who have read 1,000,000 comics. You know, I get people in and out of my house all the time. And when they see, well, the house in general, the whole thing has got a comic book collection, basically. People react and they're like, oh, my God. I actually had a pair of younger folk come over a few weeks back that I played D&D with, and they had never been here before. They walk in the door and they're like, oh, this is exactly what I figured your house would look like. comic books all over, frames, images of comic book art, collectible pieces. And they're like, no, this is cool. I want my house to look like this.
Yeah, awesome. you're doing good work out there, Rook. Good work.
And when I say they were younger, we're talking about, it was a group of like 18 to 21 year olds that walked in the door. And, you know, so these kids, I can call them kids. I'm old enough now. these kids walk in here and they're like, wait, I'm allowed to be like this as an adult? And that's the fun part, is we don't have to lose that. And comic books give us that, you know, whether they be the superhero or we have an amazing art noir book like Comic Book Kills. The images I've seen from it are absolutely fantastic.
It's done a fantastic job, the co-creator and artist. I can't praise him enough.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how y'all hooked up. Is this your first project together, or y'all worked together in the past?
No. Hoyt and I met years ago at that Mecca Disney World of all comic book conventions, Heroes Con, in Charlotte, North Carolina. And nice. Hit it off at the time, and just had similar interests, and I talked to him and said, Hoyt, I've kind of got this idea I think you'd be great for. And buddy, was he. If I have submitted the frame of the house or what have you, then he has just brought the real world Technicolor Thunder boom and just made it live and breathe. And just can't thank him enough as my partner and co-creator, just for everything he's brought to the table. Hoyt is deserves nothing but praise. He is, and I just hope and expect and hope Comic Book Kills is a really good thing that helps him along his journey to just bigger, well, not bigger and better, because I'm pretty proud of the book and all humility, but to more great things.
Fantastic. Scout Comics actually happens to be just 3 hours south of me.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, they're located right out of Fort Myers, Florida. And, the one thing I'll say about Scout is last year they got hit pretty hard by the hurricane. They they had some flooding and some damage. Not as bad as some of the surrounding areas in Fort Myers. But, man, they jumped right back into it, and they went full steam ahead. I'm very impressed by Scout Comics overall, the way they present themselves. Really, they've got an open submission, like you mentioned. You can submit to them to be published. And obviously, as we have just heard, they are looking at those submissions. Those aren't just going into a trash bin somewhere.
So, yeah, and that starts with, you know, they're in this because they're such fans and creators themselves. James Hayek, who is kind of leading the ship. I mean, he's a force of nature, got nothing, and just total professional, awesome dude. And then recently reacquired, Jim Pruitt, who is just, you know, legendary in the business and just an awesome guy. I've got nothing but great things to say about Mr. Pruitt and also his brother Jim. Just good people, and that's where it starts. They love what they're doing, but they love it, and everything else spirals out from that. So.
Fantastic. That's great to hear, man. So great. Let me switch gears for a second and jump back to our original conversation we had so long ago, it feels like now. Jason and the Olympians. When we first talked, that was on Kickstarter. And Don and I heartbreakingly saw that not succeed on a Kickstarter. It did not fund. And you promised us, you're like, don't worry, it'll be back. And it did. It is. It is back, and it is being published by Band of Bards. Is that correct?
That is correct. Band of Bards is an awesome up-and-coming publisher based out of Buffalo, New York. They're veterans, and yet they are dedicated to diversity, representation, and inclusivity. That's part of their mission statement. And they've been nothing but awesome. Again, I got nothing but great things to say about those guys. They have a lot of good titles going on right now. American Hercules, which is one of their books. I hope I'm getting the title right. But it just got, for example, like CBR.com, Comic Book Resources, called it like one of their top 30 indie comics. Now, there are a lot of indie comics out there. So yeah. To get recognized in that way, it just shows the awesomeness they're bringing. And I'm so glad that Jason and the Olympians is going to be part of that. So
that's fantastic. And yes, I know some listeners are going, oh, God, he's talking about that again. Yeah, I've been sliding into shows here and there since Shane and first told me about it. I've been sliding into the background of shows being like, hey guys, by the way, remember this? Yeah. So there you go. This is why I've been doing it, because Shane let me know that was happening, and I just went, oh well, I gotta let people know about this.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rook, so much, buddy.
Oh, certainly. You know, when I first looked at that book, I knew that was going to be something right up my alley. And I got to tell you something. Honestly, my new addiction is your fault.
Oh, yeah?
My new Kickstarter addiction started with this book.
Well, I got a little something else for you, little rookie.
I cannot stay off Kickstarter. It is to the point now where my wife has budgeted me, where she's like, okay, listen, this is how much money you get a month now for Kickstarter. I'm like, well, okay, that's about what I've been spending. She goes, yeah, I know, that's your cap. You're done. So, funny enough, she doesn't give me grief when I go to the comic book shop and order books.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. So,
yeah, but I'm spending just as much money in one trip to the comic book shop is just as much money as a month on Kickstarter.
That's what I'm saying. You better hold on to that, fine lady. So,
oh, trust me. I know. heck, half the books in one of these file cabinets belong to her. So,
But just to, in case, you know, we have talked about it before, and thanks for everybody's indulgence and continued support for Jacin, and that's J-A-C-I-N, and the Olympians. The premise of it is, unlike the dark noir tale that adult-oriented that comic books kill is, Jacin and the Olympians is, we envisioned the tale, my co-creator Alex Ogle and I, which Alex has done, you know, a lot of Marvel licensed art. He was an alternate cover artist for The Amazing Spider-Man number 75, and he serves as a graphic designer and so much more on this book. But he had a middle school aged daughter at the time, and we were like, well, what is a tale that Alex and his daughter could both read and enjoy equally? And Jacin and the Olympians kind of, you know, sprung out of that. And the conceit of the book, as some people like to say, I say premise, but the premise of the book is, it is the gods of Greek myth not only really existed in the past, but up not only through the present and on into about 200 to 300 years into our future. But the Titans of legend, or rather the dark alien menace behind the Titan myth, returns, wipes the gods out, and Jacin Jacinta Mukai must, who's a young teenage prodigy female, must band together with a team of demigoddess clones to use giant robot colossi to defend the remnants of humanity. Humanity's last hope, Rook, is Jacin and the Olympians.
Come on, people. If that didn't just sell you on the book, I don't know what will, because that just sounds freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, just awesome. You give me giant fighting robots, Greek gods and demigods, alien space aliens, you know. I mean, what more do y'all want from a book?
Yeah, and imagine it all drawn, illustrated by somebody who is very much in, imagine Sean Gordon Murphy with even more manga sensibilities. We talked about Mattia Monaco, who's an Italian artist, has just, you know, just knocked it out of the park with just the visuals on this book, humbly, in my opinion. An awesome guy. And and we're already working on volume two. And one of the highlights of my day is when pages come in from Mattia. And also, Mayo Pasek is the colorist, and she's just, you know, just that the rainbow thunder prism.
Oh, woo, yeah.
Boom, you know.
Just, yeah, the color on that is just, it shows such a diversity in your work. When we're talking about two very, very opposite style books, you know, you are not one to sleep on an idea. You get an idea and you go full force ahead on it. And it's fantastic. I love it. Where do some of these ideas for you come from? You know, are you just taking all this different stuff that you have bouncing around and just going, you know what, I'm going to add this to this and do something wild.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, more or less. I mean, I love stories, Rook. I mean, I love comics, but I'll be honest. I just love stories in general. And, you know, to give you, and probably to the detriment of my career, because the first thing, you know, an agent or a publisher or anybody will try to is place you in a niche.
Yes.
And niche marketing, like, so you're the horror guy, or you're the comedy guy. That's, you know, I like cheesecake, but I don't want to eat it every night. You know, I like a variety, and I love a variety of stories. So, you know, these different kinds of stories appeal to just different aspects and emotions that I love. Another project I'm working on for Cosmic Line Productions with graphic designer Keith Finch and the phenomenal artist Ben Perkins, is it's a dark tale. It's probably even darker than Comic Books Kill, called Deathslinger. And it's on the, just again, the antithesis of Jason. It's an ultra violent, epic odyssey, which Ben is just killing, and it's going to be out in 2024. So I can't wait to share the world with that. But anyway, we were talking about Jason and the Olympians, or just the variety. So I just like different stories, man. I mean, who wants to watch the same old thing every night? Who wants to read the same old thing every night? I bet a guy like you is a perfect example. I bet you listen to your death metal, but I bet there's some Mozart and Bach that you know. I mean,
trust me, it's actually been commented on as I arrive back in my office in my work truck. All right, which is it today, death metal or Lady Gaga?
That's awesome. And not that I'm any big comics pro, but my humbly, at my level, the advice I would give to anybody at any level in comics or whatever is, you know, read and experience outside of your genre, or you bring nothing new back to it, or you're out of your medium. If all you ingest is comics ever, then what new are you going to bring back to the medium? Think about Innovator. We mentioned Steranko. Think about Adams. Think about Buscema. These are guys that came from an advertising backgrounds. They brought those skills in, and now they're legends. But it's not to say that people who work in comics don't know the business. Obviously, they do. Kirby, anybody?
Yeah.
But it's just, these are examples of, you know, rather than retreading old ground, what new can you bring? And a diversity of experiences is going to bring diversity to your work and diversity to your life, which is just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we just recently did an episode on Marston, the creator of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
We're talking about a guy who had, like, degrees in psychology and worked on the first, kind of the first lie detector machine. Here is a man who created a long-lasting icon of comic books with Wonder Woman. And there was so much more to him, and it fascinates me that he put so much of himself into that character. Mm-hmm. You know, and writers do that. Comic book artists and writers do that. Artists and writers of any genre do that. You step back and you look and you see, okay, right now there's an amazing sci-fi story over here. Over here we've got a mystery thriller noir, and coming up next we've got a crazy horror, like violent, you know. This shows such diversity in your work, but it also, as you said, you have a diverse lifestyle that you experience things. And I think that's one of the things that more comic book readers need. I see so many people stuck in the superhero genre, which, don't get me wrong, it's a great genre.
Absolutely. Again, I love it. Is it the only thing I want to read? No, it's not.
No. You know, hey, I'm guilty of looking at a comic book on a shelf, and you'll know what this is in just a minute. What's this? Issue number one? It's in black and white? It's all about zombies? That sounds stupid. Threw it back on the shelf, walked away.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Walking Dead, buddy. Missed out there, it sounds like. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that first issue in my hand, first issue, first printing, and I went, that's stupid. Put it back on the shelf.
Oh, well, we've all done stuff like that, so don't beat yourself up too bad, man.
I just think it's funny because, like, at the time, it was all superhero, 100% all the time. And, you know, it's that book, when I finally sat down and started reading it, made me go, it's the people. Absolutely. In the books. It's not the superhero. It's the people in the books. Right. That's what's really amazing. Yeah. You know, and I find myself reading more diverse, more unusual, You know, just offhand, Red Rocket 6 is sitting right in my vision line at the moment. Great book that was. And then I've, I'm reading books about people dealing with depression, you know, abandonment, things like that. You know, comic books have become therapy for writers.
Absolutely. You know,
do you find yourself working your way through things as you write?
Yes. I think it's, you may not even realize it in real time. Now, this isn't a comic, but I'll give you, and it's because I really need to think about that in terms of my comics. I really do, Rook. But I know I wrote a novel called Bad Mojo, which has kind of a cult following. It's kind of a, I hesitate to call it urban fantasy. It's more dirt road fantasy. But it features, and spoilers here, guy. You find out that a little girl is murdered throughout the course of the book. And I didn't realize it at the time. And I'm going to get personal with people here for a minute, probably TMI. But I didn't realize it at the time. But after I wrote that book, after it was literally published, and I'm looking at it, or maybe not by that point, but it was long after I wrote it, I was like, well, holy crap. This is my subconscious bubbling up and writing about my wife and I went through a failed in vitro process, and I had never felt more helpless in my life.
Wow.
Now, the luck of that, I'd spent my savings, this emotional crisis. I can remember just sitting in my kitchen floor with my wife after, and she's just bawling, and I'm just holding her. And, you know, and I'm hurting too, and I don't know what we're going to do. Now, luckily for us, she got pregnant the old-fashioned way the very next time, ironically, after going through all that. But and you know, now my son is 13, bigger than me, but and my best buddy in the world.
Yep.
And so lucky. But all that to say, I read Bad Mojo and I realized this is me dealing with that. And I had no idea as I was going through it as I was writing it. But this is my subconscious trying to get out this, I guess, for lack of a better word, pain. And there are other things. Speaking of zombies and books, Brian Keene is a horror novelist. He wrote about like the zombies represent. He was going through a bad divorce. Zombies represented his wife's attorneys. and on the comics note, it's not me personally. But I was lucky enough to get to host a comics panel at a convention in my hometown one time, which had Richard Starking, Donnie Cates, and others. And I hope, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't know the exact details, but I do know Mr. Cates has gone through some things recently in life, and I wish him the best. But one of the questions I asked about was, you know, what is it about your pain that you bring to your work? And it wasn't that specifically that, and by every panelist up there, they got real in the same way in that minute. And outright emotional. So we do, creators, and I'm sure people that, you know, you invest in your work, pieces of you, and it comes out. It can be, so, yes, that's a very long answer. Yes, it can be cathartic, I guess.
Fantastic answer. And, you know, strange coincidence, I'm actually reading Kate's run on Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Oh, man, I just bought the trade for that. So
yeah, I did too. And, you know, I'm reading through it going, man, this guy's good. What's he working on now? And like you mentioned, he's going through some things at the moment, and he's not working on anything. I truly wish him the best because I find him to be a fantastic writer.
Yeah.
But you never know what anybody's going through, and you know, for you to share what you're talking about, the information about Bad Mojo, that's huge. You know, I hope that if our listeners have read that book, you go back and reread it with new eyes and understand a little bit more behind it. That, thank you for sharing that.
Oh, no problem. I owe it to, and it's not anything of me, humbly, it's the power of story, Rook. And I know I don't have to tell you, I get personal with you again, man. When I was in college, which, as you can tell by the gray in my goatee, which I'm sure your audience can't see, was quite some years ago. But my parents, parents had divorced. I'd just broken up with my girlfriend of years. My grandfather had just died, losing, and he was the last of my, you know, my grandmother, his wife, had died previously. So he was like the last one of that, my mother's family. So, and, you know, I was in a fraternity, but I was feeling more alone than ever. I was surrounded by acquaintances, but no friends. And, you know, I tell you, man, it was a rough time. And the only thing that got me through it was the power of story, of books, that's of comics, of audio books, of movies. They were my friends. Comics were my friends then. I mean, and it got me through it. So the power of story, I owe so much to it. Yep. And I'm just grateful that it has been in my life. And you know, take me out of the equation. Comics, stories, man, they're just literally no joke. That's why I was talking about earlier, these golden age creators with comic book kills. Whatever happened, they have touched people's lives. They have changed the world.
Yes, they have.
Everything to them. So I'm grateful.
So you mentioned a book coming up. You've got Comic Book Kills coming. Jason and the Olympians is hitting shelves. What date again?
Unfortunately, by the time this airs, the order cut off. But you can probably still get it. I order it through bandofbards.com. Digitally, Jason and the Olympians will be on Global Comics. It will hit stores July 26th. And you still can order, just while I'm talking about it, Comic Book Kills. There are actually two previews world codes. It's JUN 232068 and JUN 232067. And it's also available through Lunar Distribution. So these books, you can probably still get either of them at your comic shop, actually. But of course, Comic Book Kills hits August 9th, should, barring any, you know, unexpected shipping delays or anything. But
right.
And again, Jason Olympians is going to hit stores July 26th. So excited, very excited.
Man, you're just doing all kinds of work at the moment, you know.
Well, it's not the moment, Rook. See, that's the fault. Nobody knows the behind the scenes going on.
The behind the scenes was months of work behind you.
Right.
And you're going, all right, come on, publish.
Yeah. Months, and sometimes, as with the case, Comic Book Kills, years. Mm. So, and really, Jason is too. So these things take time and just hard effort. I say, you know, you want to make comic books, you have to be an idiot, because comic book creators are people who refuse to throw in the towel when any sane person would. So,
yeah, absolutely. Question for you. So Comic Book Kills, you said, is years of work. Why not take that to Kickstarter?
Hoyt, my co-creator, and I actually had that discussion, but it had a long and arduous road. We had a publisher interested and were dealing with them, and then had a very bad experience with them. And after that, we talked about the Kickstarter, but ultimately just decided that was not a route that Hoyt and I wanted to go. And so, you know, just start submitting it through normal channels. And like I said, for a long time, that's just a long process. Part of that reason is, you know, you kind of want to not submit it all everywhere all at once as a courtesy to the publishers who are looking at it. You want to give them a reasonable amount of time to consider, and then you move on to the next one. So that takes time. Absolutely. And then again, ultimately, Scout Comics was the publisher who realized what we were going for and had the vision for the book. And so that's, you know.
And truthfully, it sounds like they're brave enough to publish it.
Absolutely. They are quite a fire brand of people. So again, excited to be with them, and just as awesome and upcoming, Jason at Band of Bards. Those guys are nothing but supportive. They're small operation, but boy, are they on top of it, and just taking great pains to just to be so organized and deliver good stories to everybody.
That's fantastic, man. You know, it's so great to hear you, you know, publishing these books, getting them out there. You know, the hardest part about doing comics is getting them out there. We're constantly getting submissions from people who are like, I have an idea for a comic I'd like to talk to you about. It's like, okay, that's cool, but do you have anything actually done? You know, which I feel horrible, because I don't want to stifle people's ideas and creativity. But we really like to talk to people who have got something out there that's ready for everybody to see, you know. So it's fantastic to see, first off, Jason and the Olympians hitting shelves, getting into the hands where it belongs, because I'm telling y'all right now, I've seen the previews for this. I was on the Kickstarter. It's a great book. And even if Comic Book Kills is half as cool as Jason, it's going to blow y'all's mind. With that, where can everybody find you across the internet?
I'm on Instagram. It's at ShaneBerryhill1. On Facebook, it's ShaneBerryhill, writer. Just, you know, all the usual. Those are probably the main two where I'm most active. I was on Twitter for a while, but no more. I definitely need to increase my social media presence. That's part of it. One next phase for me, Rook. But yeah, just Google Shane Berryhill, Google Jason, JACIN, and the Olympians. Go to bandofbards.com for that, as well as asking for it at your local comic shop. Of course, Scout Comics is out there now. It's a Comic Book Kills is a Diamond Distributor Spotlight title. So excited about that. But you can find more information at scoutcomics.com and just by following me on the socials.
There you go, everybody. Go on, get on it, get after it, tell your shops to order it. Shane, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. I want you on the show more. I want to see more comics from you. Fantastic time talking to you. It's just a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us.
Thank you, Rook.
Until next time, everybody, read more
comics!
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.